With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Brett, the 40th birthday boy and Cliff's Flea Circus. Hi Brett, how's your birthday?
It was fine, yes, it was good. I enjoyed it. I even had a McDonald's, can you believe that? And a Greggs in the same day.
Oh, well, why not? You're only 40 for 365 days.
Yeah, and now I've got to start running for the rest of my life to get rid of the excess weight.
I think, is it not a fact that McDonald's burger will stay in your intestines or in your anal tract or something like that until 200 years after you've died?
I think that is quite possibly true, especially as it was a grand Big Mac.
Oh, well, maybe
it's going to be there even longer.
I don't know what that is, but maybe if you get the pastry shits from the Greggs, it'll flush the grand Big Mac out. And what you've done is had a perfect combination of fast food that clears, maybe, enriches your soul because of the joy it brought you.
Well, it did also that, definitely.
Clears out your arse pipes and stuff.
Your arse pipes. Yeah, they might have counteracted each other. Is that what you're saying? Well, that's good. I hope that's happened.
New messages. Greggs was breakfast. What did you have for breakfast?
I had two bacon and sausage sandwiches with a custard donut and a latte.
Oh, a latte.
That's what I had. Yeah.
Fancy.
Right. As I used to call it, latte.
I think that is fine. I think that's how you pronounce it. I don't think the latte is...
Latte. Well, it sounds more French. I assume it's French.
Is it French? I don't know.
Or Italian or whatever. They know their coffees, aren't they? So it's one of them.
Yeah.
So that's why I call it latte. Okay. But yeah, that's what I had first.
Okay, well, that's nice. Was it brought to you? Did you move at all on your birthday?
I did not move. I didn't move an inch. It was all brought to us by my lovely and amazing wife.
Yeah.
And she also put loads of balloons up and stuff like that. I was spoiled.
It looked like it looked really good. It looked like you were spoiled. But great. 40, fucking hell. Did you ever think we'd be talking to each other when we got to 40?
No, I thought I'd be dead by the time I was 30, to be honest.
I think you were in my Deadpool choice, weren't you, for being... Probably when you were about 22, I think, but never mind.
Yeah,
you clung on.
I did. I did it out of a tenner,
but what would I prefer?
You know, Keith Richards still going, isn't he? So, you know, if anything can happen. It's going to be you next month anyways. So
yeah, 3 weeks today and it will be my 40th. Sadly, I can't get a Greggs delivered.
Oh, that's shocking.
I have to take the day off work.
Yes, that's good.
Which is good, and I'm going away for a couple of nights. So we might end up either recording the podcast on my 40th, which I hope we're not.
let's not do that.
And maybe you can edit that one to save us the bother on my birthday weekend away.
I'll do that one, definitely. I'll do that one.
Well, did you get anything, or was it just all presents in the form of fast food?
It was say presents in the form of fast food. I did get a Blu-ray, which we watched after we ate all of our junk food.
Okay.
And I'll tell you about that in a bit.
Right.
And I got a large amount of money.
Well, that's good.
Which I don't know what to do with. I've got no idea what to do with it.
You can send it to me if you want.
I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. But yeah, we watched The Lovely Wife got the film Tenet for us, the Christopher Nolan film. And obviously,
she fell out with you.
Well, I'll get on to that. As you know, I'm a massive Christopher Nolan fan and everything. And I was looking forward to watching it. I thought it was absolutely awful.
Finally! Finally, you've come round to my way of thinking.
Well, I mean, I love his films and stuff like that, but it was pretentious.
All of his films are pretentious. Overly I'm sorry to break it to you.
No, but this one was really... It was like he crossed a line, I think, with this one. It was like a 2.5 hour algebra test. That's what it was like.
For a start, it's too long. yeah, I mean,
apparently, you've got to watch it 3 or 4 times to know what's happening.
Bullshit.
Now, if you don't enjoy it the first time, why are you going to do that?
Exactly, it's bullshit. Why are you going to bother? I hate. This is what I don't like about it. It's what I don't like about when I've tried to watch Breaking Bad 3 or 4 times. I know my dad loves it.
Uh-huh.
So, and I know loads of people who listen will love it. They're going, but by the third series, it gets really good. I'm like, by the third series? Why is it not good at the beginning? That's when I'm starting to watch it.
Well, the Bane's into that new Marvel thing, that WandaVision. And I watched the first 2 episodes and I was like, this is rubbish. But Lennon's massively into that kind of stuff. And he says, well, it gets really good after episode 3. And I'm like, I watched the first 2. Isn't that enough?
Yeah, no, like, but it should be good at the beginning. Why is it like, I tell you what, we won't be any good until like the 30th episode. At that point, we'll start being good. But that WandaVision, I started watching it. Yeah, I watched the first episode, and maybe it's because I don't know the MCU universe, but I hadn't got a clue what was going on, and I just didn't get it. I kind of liked what they were doing with the styling of the 50s sitcom, and I get that it then moves through the like decades with different styles of sitcoms and stuff. I think that's pretty good. That's clever. I like that. Like, nice. Do the style right. Great. But I didn't understand what was going on with the characters or the storyline. So I could have just watched like Bilko or something and it would have been better.
You should have. But I mean, I don't think you're going to watch that Christopher Nolan film, are you?
I'm not.
But it's about time moving backwards and forwards at the same time. I mean, it's just baffling.
Mm-hmm. Did you get the hour and a half back because of that?
You should have done, shouldn't you? The other thing about it, which is the craziest thing, is you can't hear what people are saying.
Right.
And that's mad, isn't it?
There's so many times when I watch a film and I'd be like, can't hear them. Like, you can hear the noises of the guns and the fucking airplanes and stuff, and you can't hear them talking. Uh-huh. And the amount of people who said to me that, oh, you've just been really picky. Like, you always on about that you can't hear the voices. Thinking, my hearing isn't bad. Like, if I watch a film in a cinema and I can't hear what the people are saying, there's a problem. Yeah. Like, it's stupid.
I know. It was. Yeah. It was. But I don't think you're going to watch it anyway, are you? But, you know, if you ever do, you know, we'll have to do it for this. And
I will never, ever watch that film.
I didn't think so. I didn't think that you would, to be honest.
Who's in it? You've got Denzel Washington Jr. He's in it.
Who's he?
Denzel Washington Jr. Who
is he? I've got no idea who he is. Denzel Washington Jr.
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Well, it's his son. It's not his name. He's called John. He's called John David Washington, but he is Denzel Washington's son.
See? I knew it wasn't called that.
Did you think
so?
Yeah,
I didn't actually know who he was. Not really.
No,
I didn't think Robert Pattinson was any good either.
I've seen Robert Pattinson in a fair few films that are not Harry Potter or Twilight or whatever he's in. Is he in Twilight? Is that him?
Harry Potter.
Did I say Harry Potter?
Harry Potter.
I know, you're not in Harry Potter.
I like the slurring of the words with Harry Potter. That was really good. Here we go. Yes, he is in Harry Potter. And he is in Twilight.
Is the Twilight nonsense that made him famous?
Yeah. Yes, okay. I think it did.
Well, I've seen him in a fair few things recently, and most people, I think, would say, actually, he's pretty good. Maybe make him Bond, because he seems like the next person that might be Bond.
Yeah.
Doesn't bother me. I won't watch them off. Either.
He looked like a... he looked like a hick or a hillbilly dressed up in nice clothes. That's what he looked like.
He's got like... He has got like funny pointy teeth, I think, doesn't he?
I think the wife said, oh, he's had his teeth done, because she likes the Twilight things.
To make them pointy.
Yeah. He's had them surgically sharpened. That's what he's had.
Like Christopher Walken in Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah, exactly like that. So I'm not sure about him. I mean, hopefully the new Batman film's good, but you never know, do you?
I'm looking forward to that still. Okay, go on.
Yeah, that'd be good. Cliff, do you know the singer Rag and Bone Man? I'm sick of him. Me, he keeps nicking stuff from the front garden. Terrible.
He keeps going past Mike. He wakes us up on the morning. He's always fucking shouting from his back.
What a bastard! What a complete bastard!
Leave me alone. Is that guy?
I've got no idea.
I don't know. Can't remember what he sings, but I think
it's sort of like Tom Jones. Is that not Tom Jones? And you messages over the weekend about the referee Lee Mason, didn't you? And the mistake
You watched it?
I did see it, yeah. He just panicked, didn't he? He completely panicked.
It's literally the worst 10 minutes of football I've ever seen. Like, you know, I'm not one of these that's like modern football shit. It is shit, but it's football, right? Who cares? It's not like life-changing or it's going to change the world, is it? It is a bit crap sometimes. But I still like watching football. I still like playing football. I'm all right with it being a bit shit. But this was genuinely the worst thing I've ever seen in football in the entire life. Like, I was watching this game live. I know you were watching Sunderland. I couldn't get the Sunderland game at that point. I did watch the rest of the Sunderland game after this. But there's so many things wrong with it. So it's Brighton against West Brom. Brighton, the team who have 50 shots every game and don't score a single goal somehow. And Big Sam's West Brom. And as much as I like Big Sam for what he did for Sunderland, and I do think he's underrated as what he's done elsewhere, he's really not doing a very good job at West Brom, is he?
In the doldrums, aren't they?
Yeah, the team's shocking. So, yeah, they were, I think they were 1-0 down at this point, Brighton, and a free kick at the edge of the box. And Lee Mason, the ref, blows his whistle. I mean, I assume he blows his whistle. He's got it and he puts it in his mouth. And for some reason, Brighton's centre-half, Lewis Dunk, takes a quick free kick.
Why is he taking a free kick?
Why he's taking a quick free kick, I don't know. It bounces off like a defender's head who's trying to clear it and goes in the top corner. I was kind of only half watching, and I saw the keeper suddenly start backpedaling towards his goal, like he proper started crawling back to it. And I was like, oh, something's going on. And I saw the ball like fly over his head, and then they showed you it again. And the ref gives it, and then obviously the West Brom players surround him.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing they're saying, Howie, that wasn't fair. The keeper like wasn't watching, which seems
wasn't ready.
It seems like a school ground argument that the keeper wasn't ready.
But then
no blasters.
The thing is, no blamers. The thing is, with the free, he asks Lewis Dunk, asks him if he can take the free kick. And he says yes, and then he realizes that he shouldn't have said yes.
Yeah, but that's the ref's
fault. Keeper's still on the post. The ref's fault. So he blows the whistle for the free kick to be taken, and then when it's going in, blows it again.
And be like, no, sorry, stop. Yeah. Stop.
No, I didn't say that.
What an idiot. So he gives it, then he disallows it,
and
then he gives it.
Yeah.
And then it goes to VAR, and what does VAR disallow it for?
I think they've disallowed because they blew the whistle before it went in. So he stopped play before it went in.
There's no way that VAR can tell that he blew the whistle a second time.
But the sheer panic on his face when he realised he had made the mistake and then realised that there's this thing called VAR which is going to watch him
anyway
and explain to him exactly the mistake he's made.
And now he's got an injury, so he can't ref the game this weekend. And
he's got an injury now.
Yeah, but it's not made up because if you watch the end of the game, this game, he's limping a bit. Yeah, it's like when you're at work and you want a day off the next day and you start being like, oh, I don't feel very well, you know.
Oh,
I hope
well,
I feel
mate.
Better tomorrow. He's doing that, isn't he?
I think I must have done that about a million times.
Oh, I hope I don't get attacked by flies on the way in tomorrow.
I don't think we've fully explained the fly thing.
I think we have explained the fly thing. What else have you been up to? Because I think I said last week I was playing football. I don't know whether I said that. I got a knock on the shin because I did a cynical foul on someone.
Right.
I was a bit late and we clashed, right? Nothing malicious.
Did you act like you meant it afterwards to seem hard? And that's what you should do.
No, honestly, the fella had the ball. I went to tackle him. I was a bit late and our shins clashed. But I think my shin is now shattered forever. I've got
Cliff, how many injuries have you?
Honestly, my entire right leg is bruised. but anyway, this fella, we're about the same age, same kind of build and all of that. He turned around as he went, "You cheeky little fucking cunt." it was just a bit of a daft tackle, but yeah, I've got a massive lump on my leg that is not going away.
Well, that's it. You're the one that suffered ultimately for it.
When
I think.
See him next week, I'll tell him like actually it was to my own detriment. Anyway, that happened. Yeah. Have you watched out on telly other than
apart from the Fulham and the Sullen matches that I've been watching? No, but I did look at a news story this week where Lady Gaga's dogs had got kidnapped. Did you see that?
No, I did not see that.
And there was a constant updating of the story about her dogs. There was no mention of the dog walker who had also been shot. They didn't mention the dog walker who'd been like shot and then the dogs had been stolen. Who's masterminded this anyway? I'll tell you what we should do. We should kidnap Lady Gaga's dogs. And almost as if she knows that, she puts a $500,000 reward up.
Do you think it's some kind of inside job like the Big Lebowski?
I think it is. I think that's exactly where it is. But nobody cares about the dog walker, do they? They just care about celebrities' dogs.
Well, talking about Lady Gaga type of thing, I'm going to talk about an entirely different celebrity. This week, I watched that Britney Spears documentary.
Oh, is it good? Because I've been meaning to watch it with Wallace.
You should watch it. I won't go into it too much if you're going to watch it, but it's superb. Uh-huh. And I think we were talking about this a couple of weeks, like with various things that we've talked about. It's just a sad, really sad tale. Like it's sad.
Is it like Brian Wilson, where that record guy was keeping him like hostage? Is it like that?
It's crazy. She's 10. From being 10, she's essentially a prisoner of like celebrity and people who want to use her for whatever they want to use her for. She rebels against it a bit, and all of the tabloids and stuff are after her because she's too sexy and all of that stuff. And then she loses it. It's honestly, it's, you see a clip of her at 10 on a TV show singing, and the old man, an ancient man presenting it, goes,
"Yeah,
hey, Brittany, that was nice. Have you got a boyfriend?" And she's like, "Oh, no, boys are gross." Mm-hmm. Like a kid response. And he goes, "Really? Would you want, not want a boyfriend?" She's like, "No, no, they're gross." And he goes, "What about me?" And she's like, and even at 10, she's
"You're
like,
worse, mate."
Yeah, you're worse than the fucking, the 10-year-old after it's Justin Timberlake. Yeah,
like, you're worse than the 10-year-old Justin Timberlake.
And she's that's, just like, "Oh, just no." And, wrong, and that, and like, that is the start of it. Like, she's 10, she's on TV. Yeah. She's from a small town in America. I mean, which is always the case when you watch these things, right? Small town,
yeah,
south,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Southern America.
Yeah, in the south. Uh-huh.
And, you know, they've got nothing. They're religious. She's got a bit of talent, and the mm-hmm. parents push her. And then it just fucking spirals and spirals and spirals. Honestly, right. You can't watch it and not think, fucking hell, what, like, it's just sad. Uh-huh. You're just going, the poor lass, she did not have a chance from the uh-huh. minute she first appeared on TV to now. Uh-huh. She's not had a chance to have a normal life, and she comes across as being nice and sweet and normal. Uh-huh. And then, you know, she's 21 and is like, "Well, fuck you," and then she just gets lambasted for that. She has kids and they're like, "Whoa, she's got kids and she's out. She's an unfit yeah. mother." And it just, honestly, it's just a sad tale. It was a bit like watching that Amy Winehouse documentary. You're just like, there was never mm-hmm. going to be another outcome than Amy Winehouse dying at the end of this. And you're yeah. watching this one and Britney Spears has somehow clawed back a little bit of control.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise she would have gone down the same. It's amazing that she didn't end up dead. Basically, honestly, it's weird, it's frightening, but like yeah. it's good. You should watch it. It's really.
Oh well, I will watch it. Maybe we should do it next for this. You never know.
Yeah, watch it and let us know what you think. Honestly, it was superb. Like,
mm-hmm. I definitely will watch it because it's one of them that the wife said, "Oh, will you watch this for this?" And we just haven't gotten around to it yet.
You should. But, you should.
Yeah, definitely. Uh-huh.
The other thing I've been doing is, for some reason, I've been listening to a lot of Neil Young. Do you like Neil Young?
I don't know. Yes. Yeah, of course I like Neil Young.
Do you like in depth? You know, obviously, he's got fucking hundreds of albums and all that.
Yeah, stuff. I haven't gone through and listened to all of his albums. But yeah, I like the greatest hits and stuff like that. And I have listened to a few. I like the Dead Man soundtrack.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, he's just, I could talk about all his albums and all that, and the good ones, the bad ones, and all that all night. But he's just brought out a live album from something like 1990 or 1989 called Down in the Rust Bucket, uh-huh. Which is like a double album, I think. I'll listen to a bit of it tonight. And there's the closer is a song that is perhaps my favorite Neil Young song called Cortez the Killer, which is on Decade, which you might have heard.
Yeah, I think I've heard that one, yeah.
And I absolutely love that song. It's like a guitar intro, like a really kind of lazy, mm-hmm. slow-burning guitar kind of intro for about 6 minutes. Then there's actual lyrics in the songs about 2 minutes. This version on this live album is like 11 minutes long. You know me, I'm not a huge fan of things that take your attention for that long.
Too long.
But, honestly, this is absolutely superb. I don't think I've heard a better version, a uh-huh. live version of any song ever. Like, it's amazing. So class. Good. Mm-hmm. So I recommend that.
There was a thing on Netflix where it was just playing live, and I watched that. That was really good. I watched that a few years back, and that was excellent.
Like, an acoustic thing, was it Heart of Gold, the acoustic? I think it's shot by Jonathan Demme.
Yeah, I think it might have been that one, huh? But I think the first time that I really sort of heard a Neil Young song was that fateful Oasis gig, wasn't it?
Where we went to London to see Oasis with Nobby, and, who shamed himself, should he want to come on and defend his actions. But yeah, I agree. Yeah. I totally agree. They played Hey, My, My.
Yeah. That's right. Uh-huh. And I was like, what's this? It's brilliant. And then I went back and discovered Neil Young after that.
Yeah, I think I remember after that, I went to York for a day or for the weekend, and I went to a record shop and bought Decade, mm-hmm. which was mm-hmm. like his best of that he brought out in like 1978 or something. Double CD. It was a triple record, but double CD. Mm-hmm. And Rush Never Sleeps, which has that on. So I bought it. And that was how I got into him. Yep. And I think I'd heard like probably on like 60s compilations, like Heart of Gold or whatever, but I didn't really know much about him. And that was what got me into him as well when we went to see that gig and played that.
I
remembered when What's the Story Morning Glory was about to come out. I can't remember what magazine it was, but I think it was Select, which like died to death in the 2000s, I think. There was a preview of What's the Story Morning Glory and then a little sidebar with Noel Gallagher talking through the album tracks and saying like, oh, this one was like this. Like, I don't know. I presume he said, oh, this is like inspired by T-Rex or whatever. And there was one of them, he said, oh, this is like Neil Young. People think he's shit or he's old, like he's an old hippie, but actually he's fucking brilliant. And I can't remember what song it was or What's the Story Morning Glory.
Yeah.
But I remember reading that thing when Noel Gallagher said, oh, like I was listening to Neil Young and I know people think he's an old hippie, but he's actually fucking brilliant. And this is inspired by that. And I think it probably is the guitar on the actual title track of the album, to be honest. Like,
yeah. Well, there was a lot of that with Noel Gallagher, wasn't there? Because we were massive Oasis fans and everything. And if Noel Gallagher said, you know, he was influenced by this or this, then we deliberately went out and sought it out.
Didn't
we?
Yeah.
It's similar with the Chemical Brothers, and that wasn't it, when he was talking about the Chemical Brothers and things. So I remember we were at one of our friends' house, and you would manage to get Set and Sun with the Noel Gallagher and the Chemical Brothers, and it was just that was the start of me liking the Chemical Brothers. It's just strange that we're almost like read everything that Noel Gallagher said and his influences and stuff like that, and then we went away and we checked it out, didn't we?
Well, yeah, I think one of the good things about Oasis and Noel Gallagher, like there's
I think so too.
In the long term. You know, like whether people are going to continue listening to their albums beyond the first two, maybe not. But I think what it did do is like people of our generation, I suppose it was a little bit like 10 years earlier when Morrissey said, oh, I like whatever random 60s band, 60s girl group, like people went to listen to that. Like in the 90s when Noel Gallagher said, actually, I really like these guys, we went to listen to them. And
yeah, we did.
We did. And if nothing else, I think that's a great legacy for them to have.
It is. But I mean, my son still listens to Oasis now and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think the legacy is obviously more to me anyway. I think in this household, I haven't forced my son or whatever to listen to Oasis. He's just done it of his own accord. You know, that's the type of stuff that he likes. Mm-hmm. So I think the music still stands up. Especially like you say, the first two albums.
Yeah,
but I haven't got all of it, man.
I haven't got the first two on record. I've got Be Here Now on record because I wanted to be contrary.
Well, the funny thing about Be Here Now is it's got a date on it, hasn't it, on the front, and that was the same day that we received our GCSE results.
Well, that was the day we went out to get it, wasn't it? It was quite a day.
It was almost more important to get the album. Than what GCSE was.
I couldn't wait to get the fucking envelope and then go down to Shields and get the album from our price. Couldn't wait. That was the main thing on my mind that day. Yeah,
of course it was.
That's why, like, it's one of those things tied up with your, you know, time and place. Like, music is the best music. Yeah. Is that it takes you back to a time and place. It's kind of like the reverse for that album because the time and place. Like, and the album release is all tied in together. It was the most anticipated album release, I'm going to say, probably of all time because of where we were in that time of...
Yeah, well, certainly for us it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, it also tied in with the fact that that was the day, like, we kind of officially left school and got our results.
It was like an end of an era type thing, wasn't it? And the start of a different one.
Yeah.
It was a very, very strange sort of time. But I remember the BBC had a sort of documentary, I think, the day before the album was going to be released.
And they did.
Had a lot of the tracks on from Be Here Now.
And yeah, I remember being like super excited by it. And then I still, like, I maintain that that album, the demos recorded in a different time would have been up there with the first two.
Yeah.
I still think there's great songs on there, but I don't blame people for thinking the 8-minute songs that don't really go anywhere with like hundreds of guitar overdubs are a bit over the top. I don't blame people for thinking that. I think all of them, I don't think there's a single song that's less than 5 minutes. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the length, but it is what it is. I still like it.
I like it. But imagine if those songs were all like a little bit tighter with a little bit less production, it would be fucking brilliant. And it's not the songs that are at fault, it's the overall feeling of the thing.
Well, it's also the influence of cocaine.
Well, it's also perfectly in tune with what was happening at the time. I almost don't mind that it's so over the top because it kind of...
Even the cover's got the, you know, the car in the swimming pool and all that, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's just like a total signpost. It's a total signpost for this was excess of the late 90s.
Yeah.
Because of so much success for these guys, this is where everything went. And I think it's okay that it's so overblown and the songs are too long and the production's too long and the cover's excessive and all of that because it perfectly captures that point in time, I think.
Yeah, it does.
And as much as I think the album would be better if it was reined in, I think it's okay that it's like that because it is a touch point in that point in time. For like, it'll be like that forever, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right there. And it's just, it was a massive thing for us, I think. And then again, a few years later, when we went to see Oasis, that was another massive touch point as well, I think.
Amazing, which we will do.
But is this an Oasis podcast?
No, it's not, but I keep saying we should do this fucking trip to London to watch them. This is your birthday podcast, your film choice.
Yes,
let's talk about it. This John Carpenter's The Thing.
Whoa, yes, John Carpenter's The Thing, my favorite film, the thing that I enjoy watching more than anything else.
And did you watch it around your birthday? On your birthday,
I watched it on the Sunday, and my birthday was on the Tuesday, so yes, I try and watch it at least once every year.
Okay.
Since I've gotten it on Blu-ray, but I think the first time that I would have watched it would have been when I was very, very young. It would have been when my mom and dad got it from the video rental shop, and that would have been the first time that I watched it. Because as I've told you before, I wouldn't sleep as a kid, and I would cry if my mom and dad paused the bed and I knew they were downstairs watching a film. Mm-hmm. To sort of get up and watch it. So I would have watched it very, very young. And it's just been a constant throughout my life, I think, this film. When I first moved into my flat, I made sure I bought it on VHS so I could watch it there. I've just bought it, you know, throughout my life, really. I just love it. It's amazing. It is my favourite film. Mm-hmm. What do you think of it? Have you seen this before?
Yeah, I've seen it before.
You've seen it before, because sometimes you say to me, oh, yeah, I've seen that one. You haven't, just to sound cool.
I have seen it before, but I don't think I really... What I thought was, I've seen it before, but I haven't really taken it all in. And then after watching it, like, a couple of days ago, I realised, no, I have seen it all in. I did take it all in, just not much happens.
Well, I would completely disagree there. A lot of things happen, I would say. A lot of things. But, yeah, I mean... As you know, I think I'm a massive John Carpenter fan, and I think this is masterpiece. I think, I mean, out of all the films, this is my favorite one.
I think I agree. And with
I think
you.
That for yeah, I think that for a lot of reasons. Really, I mean, the special effects are the best I've seen in a film ever. special effects are absolutely amazing.
Well, we keep talking about films that are like undervalued. I mean, look, The Thing now is regarded as a classic, but at the time it was totally panned.
It was hated.
It made a profit, but not a massive profit. And the critics fucking slated it.
That's the thing, yeah.
And it ruined John Carpenter's career.
It did.
To a point. I mean, he would have been massive. If this was a big hit, he would have been like a Spielberg-style director.
Yeah. But I mean, it wasn't. It ruined it that much that I think he was signed to Universal to make four films.
Bought him out of his contract.
Bought him out of his contract, yeah. And I mean, it wasn't just hated by the critics, although I'm sure that had an effect on, you know, how, you know, people went into the theatres or whatever to watch it. But the people that actually went in to watch it as well, they hated it. Everybody hated it.
I think it, but when you read about what they hated, it was weird because they're like, it's strange thinking about it now because it was thought of as being too gruesome and too, like, like the special effects and the monster
too
effects
gory.
Were being too gory.
Mm-hmm.
But also praised for how good they were. Like, these effects are amazing. These effects are amazing. I can't believe that there's a film with these effects in. But also, it's a little bit, those effects actually are too gory.
It's too
weird
much.
That they are, the same people were saying both of those things. And
it's because I think it's because the special effects are so good and so realistic and so tangible. It's not like a computer generated thing where you can tell it's fake. It doesn't work. You know, it doesn't scare you.
No, like a little bit like horror. Think about Ghostbusters. Obviously, Slimer's not there. Like, I love Ghostbusters.
You know that it's not there. It's I mean, I think the scariest bit in Ghostbusters is to start with the thing in the library. That's pretty scary.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you can tell it's not real. But this stuff, it's got moving parts and, you know, you can almost touch it.
It is gory, but like that's
too
the point.
Real it's, for people then.
It's strange to think that people were like so freaked out about that then, because now it's almost like a badge of honor if you do that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, it is now. It is now. I mean, John Carpenter, he was called a pornographer of violence.
I mean, if somebody called me that, I'd be happy. But
that'd be amazing, wouldn't it? and the critics call it like instant trash. This fellow,
it's not, like I say, people didn't like it. It's weird because it predates the 80s video nasty phenomenon.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons.
But I think it births that. Like that happens because of this and that. What happens is a lot of VHS, massively successful films on VHS because of the impact of VHS.
Mm-hmm.
But this is influenced all of that, but it happened just before it. And it's so many times we talk about, we pick a film or a TV show that we're like, this is the most influential thing on something that was massive. Mm-hmm. But this thing was just that little bit too early. And like,
The other thing is, I think it touched a nerve. I mean, E.T. came out at the same time, so everybody went to see E.T. and loved it. It was a nice, happy, friendly alien or whatever. There was also, like, the AIDS pandemic was sort of happening at the same time. So anybody being stuck with needles and things like that, that's the thing that people most complained about in the film.
Do you think that was on at the same... AIDS thing in America was a little bit later, but okay.
No, I think it was happening around the same time. And the thing that people complain about in the film was not necessarily, you know, the special effects and stuff like that, which are amazing. It's the bits where, you know, characters are cutting their fingers or being stuck with needles.
Yeah,
or
because of the blood and the contamination.
Yeah,
okay.
that's the thing that people didn't like. But, I mean, I remember the first time I watched it, I was absolutely terrified. It terrified us.
Well, it's scary. It's totally really scary. And it's scary in a real way, not because of the monster or the alien. It's scary because of the paranoia, which is what it's all about. It's the people starting to accuse each other of who's the bad guy here, which again is like the paranoia of the Cold War era or the AIDS pandemic or whatever.
Yeah.
It's that feeling.
The mistrust of the next door neighbor, isn't it?
The guy I live stand next to, what if he's got this thing?
Yeah.
Or what if he's the bad guy? And I don't know, I don't realize. And it's not really about that there's an alien monster running around, although that's brilliant in the film. But the actual overall feelings and the thing that grabs your attention or pulls your heartstrings and all of that in the film is the physical human paranoia and mistrust.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think so. I mean, it the isolation aspect of it. I mean, the whole idea of it's just unbelievable, really, isn't it? There's these 12 guys in there that are isolated in the Antarctic, and they come across an alien, a shape-shifting alien that can take over them, absorb them, and then imitate them.
What are they it's just there amazing. For?
That is what nobody knows. Nobody knows what they're there for. They're just on the Antarctic. They're a research facility. Outpost 31.
The Antarctic.
Yeah, you don't get to know whether it's in the book, which is what this film's based on. A book called Who Goes There. This film is very similar to the book. There was a film in 1951 as well called The Thing from Another World, which is based on that book as well. But this film is mainly based on like the book, which is about paranoia and stuff like that. But yeah, you don't really get to know what they're there for. But you don't really need to know.
In 1951, do you think it probably very similar would have been against commie kind of like paranoia and stuff like that, like in
the Red Menace. Yeah. It would have been that. But I mean, at the time it was written, obviously 1938, the Second World War would have started a year later, wouldn't it? There would have been none of the Red Menace, I guess, you know, at that time. I think it was just more about, you know, an idea of people in isolation and this sort of creature sort of being there and which could sort of imitate them. I think that's the terrifying thing about it. You don't really get to know much about the creature or how it behaves or how it works or whatever. There's like loads of speculation if you put YouTube on. You know, this is how it works or that's how it works. Nobody knows how it works. Nobody knows at all. I mean, they can speculate, and that's all they're really doing. But that, I think that's the terrifying thing about it. That it can just become you. You know, it almost steals you. You know what I mean?
So for anybody who doesn't know, it's 1982 John Carpenter film starring Kurt Russell, and he's not massively well known at the time. But he was in.
And Wilford, I'll kill you, Brimley. It's amazing.
He's really good, isn't it? There's only one other guy that I think anybody would recognize who's the. He's always a president and stuff.
Yeah, do you mean Keith David, Childs?
Yeah. No, Gary. Gary?
Oh, Gary.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, I mean, there's 12 actors in this film and they're all brilliant.
They are all good.
For me.
I think the names of them are really weird. There's a man called Windows.
A lot of the names are taken from the book by John W. Campbell Jr. So a lot of those names are lifted from the book. That's the thing.
Yeah, I'm not having to go at them. I mean, I'm not saying that John Carpenter has to blame. I just think the strange names, like
the only one that isn't is Windows. And the reason the doctor who plays Windows, he decided that he would just always wear sunglasses.
Okay.
And when he turned up on set, Thomas G. Waite, he's called. He says, "Well, I want you to call us Windows because I've always got sunglasses on." John Carpenter just went, "Oh, all right." But yeah, it's written this film by Bill Lancaster, who's Burt Lancaster's son.
Yeah.
And the scripts. The thing is about this film is if they make a mistake, the film's fucked. Do you know what I mean?
What do you mean?
Because it's a mystery, this film. So if there's like a glaring sort of error within the film or within the story,
okay,
or in the script, they've messed it up and there's no mistake. You can't find a mistake.
No,
it's
no,
just
it's
like so tight.
Yeah, it's a perfect like story and the screenplay and stuff's perfect. So basically, his 12 guys are on this mission into Antarctica to research something, who knows what. And then what turns out is before them, some Norwegian guys have been on the same thing and they've uncovered a spaceship.
A spaceship, yeah. They've discovered a spaceship.
And you start by seeing a helicopter landed and there's a Norwegian guy in this helicopter shooting at a dog, trying to kill the dog. And the dog's running. He ends up at the American base.
Running to the American base. Yeah, yeah he does. He does. So, yeah, I mean, you're straight in it with the film. That's what I like about it. I mean, the other thing, you're straight in it with the titles. The titles are absolutely amazing.
I think the titles are absolutely superb. I love how the title of the film, The Thing, appears.
It like, burns through really the screen almost, doesn't it?
Yeah, but you see the, you basically see a spaceship like land on or crash.
Or crash,
Head towards Earth. And then what you see is the thing appear and what you get, you gather is the thing's crashed and the name of the film appears, burns through the screen, like you said.
Burns through the screen, exactly, yeah. So you're straight into it, and the music as well by Morricone is just fantastic.
Well, this is a weird thing, because I didn't realise that Ennio Morricone had done the music to this film, and it seems a little bit weird that John Carpenter has been like, Morricone, I love you, will you do the soundtrack to my film? And he's like, yeah, okay. He's like, but will you make it sound exactly like I've done the soundtrack myself? You don't think that's strange?
I think at the time, John Carpenter was known for his music and for his films, and the music had a very, you know, you knew it was John Carpenter when you put the film on, what the music was going to be like. I think most of the Morricone stuff was like the orchestral stuff, which is brilliant and
it
like
is a lot more
terrifying
subtle,
almost in like a 50s way.
Yeah, it's a lot more subtle.
But I think John Carpenter did have an input.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did have, you know, a little bit of an input, although he sort of plays that down, I think, to this day. He says it was all his sort of idea. But it's that kind of like bass, isn't it? That bass line of music,
it's great.
Which
is, it's
makes
really,
it like
it's
John
really, Cobb. Really good.
So, yeah, I mean, the Norwegians are chasing the dog and you're right into the action sort of thing, aren't you? It's just amazing from the off, I think.
Yeah, and it doesn't
and
take long,
you know,
to get going.
As a viewer, you know that there's something wrong with the dog.
Well, of course.
Otherwise, why are they shooting it?
Yeah, you understand straight away. You wouldn't just find a man shooting at a dog. But obviously the dog runs towards the American base, and it's that kind of thing. Like they're like, what the fuck are you shooting a dog for, you idiot? You crazy fool. And they want to protect the dog from this random guy who's coming.
Yeah. Well, they think the Norwegian guy's just in a nutcase.
Yeah.
Especially as he shoots Bennings in the leg.
He shoots him in the knees, yeah.
Shoots him in the leg, so they just think he's gone nuts, obviously, you know, stir crazy or whatever. And
they don't know of them at this point, right? So they don't know that they're even there. All they're seeing is like they're there doing whatever they're meant to be doing, and all of a sudden a helicopter comes down with a guy speaking a foreign language. They don't know what he's
shooting,
shooting a dog.
No, they're
somehow running. Around,
I mean, they think he's Swedish, or MacReady thinks they're Swedish, isn't he? Hey, Sweden!
So Kurt Russell plays MacReady,
yes.
I think he's essentially the hero of this film, but there are no heroes of this film, are there? Like, nobody's better than the other person. I think that's an interesting facet of the film, I think. There isn't a good guy.
No, there's no good guy. I mean, Kurt Russell, he's like an alcoholic, isn't he? He's a helicopter pilot, and he certainly doesn't like that chess computer, does he?
He fucking hates that shit.
But yeah, you're right. There's no hero in a sense. But I mean, the Kurt Russell's character MacReady sort of takes over, you know, partway through the film, doesn't he? He takes his opportunity to sort of take over. You know, he's not the actual leader.
No, but we're watching it now, knowing who Kurt Russell is and that he's a film star and he's always a good guy. At the time, he wasn't really, was he? So there'd be no reason for you to think that he was the one who was in the right. And actually, at the end of this film, he still might not be, but whatever. Like, watching it in 1982, he might be the bad guy, just like the other guy might be the bad guy or whatever. But there's no bad guys, there's no good guys, because it's a democratic problem here, right? The issue is that there's a alien that can get into you and you become the alien, or you end up discarded and the alien will look like you. No one's a good or bad guy. It could happen to anyone. It's not anybody's fault.
It's all about self-preservation, isn't it? Mm. That's the thing. From the human's point of view, they want to keep themselves alive. They don't want to be assimilated or, you know, they don't want to be impersonated by this thing and absorbed. But from the alien's point of view, it's the same thing. That wants to do the same thing, doesn't it? It's self-preservation. So that's what it's about. The alien's selfish. The people are also selfish at the same time, aren't they?
Yeah. There's literally no...
And that's what creates the paranoia, isn't it?
Yeah. What's your favourite bit of the film? Like, I'm going to presume people who are listening have seen the film, so we don't need to go into all the ins and outs of it. But what's your favourite bit about it? What do you like?
There's about a 20-minute period in the film where the pressure's just being completely ramped up, and that's where Norris's character has a heart attack. He's the thing, but the thing sort of copies you so completely, it copies your imperfections as well. And Norris has a heart problem and he collapses with a heart attack, and they try to defibrillate him and sort of bring him back, and the thing bites him and chops off the doctor's arms. That is absolutely amazing. And then the head sort of falls up. And then the head falls down and turns into some kind of spider thing.
Yeah.
That is amazing. It's an absolutely brilliant scene. And has the best line as well, where the guy goes, "Say, you've got to be fucking kidding," when the spider thing sort of walks up.
Yeah, I think Kurt Russell's like, and he goes, "Fuck you too." That's the best line, surely.
Yeah, that's at the end. No, I like, "You've got to be fucking kidding." And the guy who says it as well, who's Palmer, the one who says it is also a thing.
Yeah.
Who says that?
My favorite bit is the next bit where they're all tied up in the chairs and MacReady's like...
Well, that's what I was going to say, you see. Yeah. There's a 20-minute period where it's that. And then after all this carnage happens, then you move into the blood test scene, which is just...
I think that is amazing. One of the greatest scenes in cinema of all time. I think it's superb. MacReady...
Yeah.
But the thing is, MacReady, rampant paranoia as well. Like, he's not a good guy. He is mad. He's totally paranoid about who's like.
But you would be, though, wouldn't you?
No, I'm not saying
he's wrong. If you were in that situation.
No, of course, I'm not saying he's wrong. But he's not a good guy in this situation. He's got innocent people tied up, like, claiming that they're all aliens.
But self-preservation?
Yeah, but also...
He doesn't know who's who.
Yeah, but he also could be an alien at this point, right?
Like, yeah, that's the point. I mean, when they were making the film, the actors would talk about, if you were the thing, would you know that you were the thing? And that's like kind of what they talked about as well, which is an interesting thing to think about.
And that's what I think is really good about that scene. It's superb. It's mental that they're all tied up together when Palmer, and he does the blood test, and Palmer is the thing.
Is the thing, yeah.
And he's just going crazy when they're all tied up next to him. I think
the other thing is whether the blood test actually works. That's the other thing, because there's a part in the film where one of the doctors say, "Well, we should prepare our own food or whatever.
Yeah.
Because if what a yeah. particle of it can take you over,
yeah.
you know. But then it leads into another question as to how long, if that is the case and a particle of it can take you over, how long does it take before you are the thing?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, there's loads of things like that in it. Like,
yeah, it's
if you are, if that thing is you, how do you know? Yeah. How does the thing know? What, how, yeah. what are the, like, how long does it take before it acts on it?
Yeah.
Because
uh-huh.
like Palmer's like normal, right? How long would he just be normal? Would it last uh-huh. like beyond the end of the film if they hadn't done the blood test? Like
yeah.
if nobody knew, would it just be normal to go back to their lives and Palmer would end up going back
yeah.
to his wife and all of that kind of stuff or whatever? Like uh-huh. that's the thing that I'm not saying there's holes in the film, but there are things to, that you can think about if it
yeah.
went to its like, if it that's kept going thing. And kept going and kept going.
Yeah. There's like, I mean, people have tried, I mean, there's loads of stuff on YouTube about people trying to analyze the film and try to work out, you know, who's the thing and when they become the thing and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And this is how the thing behaves. I just think you don't know. I mean, the only clues that you're given is what the scientists say in the film, and they could be wrong.
Well, yeah, because they're
you
just
know,
guessing.
You don't know. Exactly.
Which I think is a great thing about the film.
It is. I mean, it makes the creature a lot more dangerous, doesn't it? I mean, because there's nothing more scary than the unknown, you know, the things that you don't know about.
I mean, you're only about 10 minutes into the film when you first see the alien creature like manifest itself, and it's uh-huh. it is genuinely horrific. It's really horrific,
yeah.
and every time it appears or breaks out of a human or whatever animal or being it's in, it is horrific. It's awful. You can tell why it would have shocked. You can see why it would have shocked audiences.
Oh yeah,
it is really horrible.
It is, and I mean the guy that did the special effects was only 22 at the time when he
yeah no
he did all
read
things.
That that's crazy.
Rob 14,
really crazy.
Yeah. And he sort of worked himself that hard that he had to be hospitalized when the film finished, put in a hospital afterwards. I mean, he's for a 22-year-old kid to be doing stuff like this,
yeah,
it's amazing.
Super. What do you think of Kurt Russell?
And you know what? If I die, I'd like to come back as Kurt Russell, I think.
Yeah.
That's what I think of Kurt Russell.
He's got the best sunglasses.
I know you like his sunglasses.
Doesn't yeah, need them, does he? Because it's dark, but he's got them on. He's got them on.
But I love Kurt Russell, mate. I think he's just, he's amazing in this film. He's amazing in, you know, all John Carpenter's films
yeah,
and stuff.
He's amazing.
And now
Ron.
Yeah. And now he's in every Quentin Tarantino film, isn't he? So
yeah, well, I mean, The Hateful Eight is essentially, mm-hmm. I haven't seen it, but the premise is this.
Yeah, it is this.
On purpose.
On purpose, yeah. That's the thing. And obviously we've got one mate, Dean Cundey, as well, who's the cinematographer.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
Everything just looks absolutely class.
It's just a superb film. I can see why it shocked people. But, like, now, in 2021, you're like, well, people are really shocked, like, that. People thought this was too gruesome to exist, so it was boycotted or people didn't go watch it, and it spelled the end of this guy's career or blockbuster uh-huh. big studio career. Like mm-hmm. now, like, you can do fucking anything. Like, really, you could do anything and
yeah,
and like nobody would care, or if people did care, it's all right, because so what.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I mean, it certainly sent John Carpenter's career down a different path, didn't it?
Yeah, and
I mean,
he still had a great career.
He did. I mean, he still made some absolutely magnificent films after this, you know. But this is his masterpiece. I imagine it must be difficult for him thinking.
Do you think he thinks it's his
my best film? And people, yeah, he does. Uh-huh. And
well, he hates it, right? He's got a love-hate relationship with it.
Well, you would if it derailed your career, though, wouldn't you?
Of course you would.
But he regards it as his best film. I mean, even some of the actors who won the film at the time it came out and saw the reaction that, you know, people had to it and stuff, they were the same. They were like, yeah, it's too much. Even the people in it. Mm. But since, obviously, since it's become a massive cult film on, you know, VHS or DVD, whatever, they've conveniently changed their minds about it.
Yeah, now people like it, of course.
But... yeah, there's brilliant actors in this film, but there's no better actor than that dog. That dog is amazing. Jed, great dog. It's a brilliant dog, sinister looking dog, and it doesn't look at the camera once. Nah, there's a bit where it walks down the corridor and stuff, and it stops at a door, and then it's all you see a silhouette of somebody in there, obviously being taken over. I think
so that's good, like stuff. From the very beginning, you know that dog is up to no good. Like it's a dog, and you know straight away it's like, oh, this dog's gonna fuck everything up.
But the other thing is that it's got rewatchability as well. I mean, you know,
because it
to
has.
Go back and see who's the thing if you're bothered about that kind of stuff.
There's loads of things you can go back and watch. It's not just that. There's you watch it once and, you know, there's a straightforward story, but there's so many bits that you can go back and watch, loads of it. What do you think about, like, the alien spacecraft kind of bit of it?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a prequel to this, which kind of sort of explains a little bit. Well, I wouldn't regard the prequel as anything. I don't think it's a very good film. I think it's got some good actors in it and stuff like that, but it's not, well, certainly not as good as this. But in the book and in the 1951 film, the blow up the ship. So, you know, they try to get it out, but they destroy it at the same time. That's not the case in this film. But I just think it's intriguing. I don't think that's the thing's ship, for one. I think the thing's got onto whoever was sort of, you know, in that ship or whatever and took over them and absorbed them. And
the ship was a well-meaning alien craft, but the thing's...
I don't think it's the thing's ship. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, I don't think it's the thing's ship.
Okay.
Definitely not. But it just, like all... Or good sci-fi, you know, it doesn't tell you everything.
No,
you don't want to be told everything.
You want
left up to your own imagination, don't you? And most of the film is like that. For example, how, you know, is that the thing's ship? How does the thing work? You know, does it take a little cell to get into
your... It doesn't tell you hardly anything, and the thing seems to change what you think. How it works and how it gets into you, or does it take over you and becomes you, or does it take over you and mutate into something else and all that kind of stuff? It's weird. Well, it's very good at pull-ups. Very good at pull-ups.
Yeah, it's good at pull-ups. I mean, the way I think of it, this could be completely wrong. The thing, it absorbs you first, and then it can imitate you.
Do you think there's a little bit of the shunting about it? So it
sort of imitate the dog? No.
I think there's a bit of shunting.
There's no way of the shunting about it. No way.
There is a bit of the shunting about it, like the way that it mutates and like when it's the faces. Especially.
Yeah, but they don't then have the ability to imitate you, do they? I mean, after the shunting, who knows what happens to that poor guy?
Anyway,
yeah,
we both, like, Brett loves the thing. I love the thing, but it's Brett's favorite film.
It is.
I think we both would hugely recommend it to anybody who hasn't seen it. The prequel is also called The Thing, right? Like, that's
stupid. Yeah, it's called The Thing as well. I don't think they actually could decide on the prequel whether it was going to be a sequel, a remake.
I think it wasn't meant to be a prequel, like, I think they were just going to remake it. And then it was called The Same Thing, but then they realized it wasn't a remake. Like,
there's also an X-Files episode, which is called Ice.
Very similar. I remember
taken
the dog.
From this.
Yeah. I remember the dog in that.
I mean, there's loads of stuff, isn't there, that this has been...
Yeah, it's hugely influential, like the puppetry, the way the aliens look when it's breaking out of the faces and all of that kind of stuff, the kind of gunk on it, KY jelly and stuff, wasn't it? It's just hugely influential, and and a film that is so clever because it doesn't give you all the answers. It's just this little period of time where you see a little glimpse of this problem, and you don't know what happens before. You don't know why they're there. I presume they're there to see what happened to the fucking Norwegian guys.
So, they're definitely not there for that reason.
Well, I presume like for the spaceship. Why would it be there otherwise?
They're there. I mean, there's a scientific sort of outposts and stuff like that on Antarctica.
Yeah, but why are they there?
Testing the ice or whatever.
Yeah, testing the ice in case there's fucking aliens underneath them. That's why they're there.
Well, you know, maybe. Could be. It's a good point.
Well, they just could test the ice.
Norwegians
fucking got just cold water, isn't it? Like, yeah, I can tell you that.
The ice has all kinds of implications for their environment and stuff, doesn't it? You know, the melting of the polar ice caps or whatever, those type of things. I mean, you don't know why they're there.
I think they're there because of potential alien.
I wouldn't agree with that, I'll be honest. They're just there as a research team, I think.
But research in what? Ice?
Yeah, like I said, there's
implications.
The implications for the environment. Definitely. I just think it's a random chance that the Norwegians...
Not in 1982. No chance. They're there because of potential alien stuff under the ice.
It's a random chance that the Norwegians find that alien, I think. And then it goes over to the Americans with disastrous consequences.
It does. What a surprise. But anyway, thanks for watching that and tell us to watch that. That was really good.
I'll watch it any day of the week.
Okay, well, Wednesday, we'll watch it then.
Tuesday.
I've got a quiz for you. Would you like a quiz?
I would like a quiz.
The quiz is all themed around your birthday. Isn't that
my
nice?
Birthday? Yeah, that is nice, yes. So by that you mean the 2nd of March? Or do you mean me as a person?
No, I mean the 2nd of March, 1981.
Right.
So, welcome to the 1981, March the 2nd. It's a quiz. It's to do with your birthday. Please think about this with the answers.
Right, I'll think about it with the
okay. They're all fairly simple questions, but I don't think you'll know the answers.
I'd still have to think with me mind, I think, wouldn't I?
Number one. What was number one in the hit parade on your birthday? The UK top 40.
Right, yes.
What's
number one? It's a strange song, I think, isn't it? Shakalaka or someone like that.
No.
What is it?
Would you like us to sing it?
Go on then.
What's the matter, you? Hey! Gotta know respect. Hey!
I love Shut Up Your Face.
Shut Up Your Face.
Shut Up Your Face.
Yeah, Joe Dolce's Shut Up Your Face.
Brilliant work, That's good.
I know what was number one on my birthday, by the way.
Yes, so do I, because I've been looking at that type of thing for your quiz. So I'll not ask that when it's yours, Shaken Stevens.
It's our good friend, Shaken Stevens. Okay. What was the number one movie in the box office? But I have to admit, this is the US box office. It doesn't seem to exist for the UK.
1981.
Yeah.
Goodness.
It would be like the next months after this are fairly good, but this is total. I've never heard of this. Right.
You're going to have to give us some clues then if you've
never heard of it. It is kind of gangstery film. Starring one of the greatest actors of all time, who also makes a mean sauce or dressing.
I've got no idea. Yeah, you're gonna have to tell
us. Honestly, I didn't know this. It's called Fort Apache, the Bronx, with Paul Newman.
Fort Apache, the Bronx.
Yeah. So it actually sounds quite interesting, like quite good. So might watch it actually.
No, I had no clue
with that. Sorry, I mean, I can't help you with that. Like, about 2 weeks after, it was Superman 2 was the biggest one. So, sorry. The best-selling toy of 1981.
I'll go with He-Man, I think.
No, I think that was like a little bit later. 1980 was a Rubik's Cube because I thought it would be that. It's a Lego train set, apparently. Lego was big.
Rubbish. Didn't I do a quiz earlier about the top selling toys of the 80s?
You did.
And I'm sure the Lego train set was nowhere to be seen.
Oh, well, you didn't cover 1981, did you?
Well, I'm looking at the UK, not the US. I think that's the thing.
This isn't all US, it was just the movies.
I wasn't born in America.
What was the top viewed TV show in all of 1981 in the UK?
In the UK.
The words TV show is misleading. What was the most watched thing on telly in 1981?
So it's not a TV show.
More of an event.
I'll say the tennis.
The tennis. Well, yeah, close. It was the wedding of Prince Charles and Diana.
Oh, of course. Because when I was born, I was given a Bible that had... Have you got this as well?
I had
Prince Charles and Diana on the front.
It's just weird, the Bible. There was a lot of Charles and Diana memorabilia in my mum and dad's, like a cup and a plate, a spoon, shit like that.
Yeah. Were you not given the Bible?
I don't think a Bible with them on. But to be fair, that Bible is probably set alight. spontaneously got busted.
It probably has.
Okay, who won the FA Cup in 1981?
Oh, that is hard, isn't it? Should have looked into that, shouldn't I? I'll say, was that Man United Southampton?
Win the cup. Tottenham.
Was it Coventry and
Tottenham?
Tottenham. Was it Coventry and Tottenham though?
I don't know who lost it. That's not a question.
Is it the Ricky Villa one?
It was the Ricky Villa goal. Yeah, yeah.
I think that was Coventry.
And do you know who might have won what was then called Division One?
What was then? Was it Sunderland?
No, the top league. Do you think we won?
Oh, the top league.
Yeah.
No. I would say Forest.
No, just after Villa with Ron Villa. Saunders.
Right. And then they won the European Cup after that, didn't they?
They did, yeah.
Yeah. Good old Villa, right?
Was that when Peter Wythe was around?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
I think it is, isn't
probably
it?
Was. I think it was. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Well done.
You got nout right.
No nout about your birthday.
Thanks, mate. Yeah,
I think you got one, didn't you? You got the first one.
Did I?
I think you
got We don't keep track.
I can't remember anything that happened 10 seconds before I'm talking about this in anything.
No, me neither, to be honest with you.
What about music?
Yes, we do have music, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. We've got music from M.A.W. This week with a song called Thursdays, which is from the new album, The Slow Burn. I said snow there because I've got snow on my mind with this film.
I thought it was because you've been listening to Informer over and over and over again, as usual.
Oh, yeah, that. No, it's not for that reason. Definitely not. But yeah, this is a brilliant song. This,
yeah, really, really.
Much like the thing itself, there's a lot of different ideas and changes in the song, isn't
there? Yeah, there is. It's nice. It's a nice, really, like, kind of clever and intuitive, like, kind of synthy number, isn't it? An instrumental track. I really, really, really like it.
I do too.
So I'm looking forward, like, the guy, Mark Willis, whose tune it is, said it's an album, like, a kind of thematic album about 2020 and in and out of lockdown and all that kind of stuff. I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Me too.
I really love this, so I'm looking forward to. I'll go on Bandcamp and see what else is on there and get what I can. So yeah, thank you for sourcing this one, Brett, and happy birthday to you.
Well, thanks very much. Much appreciated. Thanks.
That's all right, and thanks to MAW for the song. Mm-hmm. We think it's good. We'll start playing it about now, and everybody else can follow us at F Circus Pod. Send us your daft questions and all that stuff. Just tweet us pictures, whatever you want, really. Abuse us if you want. We're not precious. And we've got Facebook and all of that. You can find us. Google Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus. We're out there. Our SEO is good. So until next time, we will see you later. Bye-bye, everyone. Thanks for going.
Bye.
Happy birthday, Brett. See you.
Cheers.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.